50 years ago, a riot broke out at the Stonewall Inn, a bar in New York's Greenwich Village. The events of that night have been described as the birth of the gay rights movement.
But that's only partially true. Activists had been working for change long before Stonewall. Eric Marcus spent years interviewing people who were there that night, as well as those who were pushing for gay rights before Stonewall. Many of those activists have since died.
Now he has brought us some of their voices, and we should tell you that our conversation includes some of the offensive names those activists were called. Eric Marcus, welcome to All Things Considered.
Thanks, Ari. Delighted to be here.
So before Stonewall, there were gay rights groups, and you talked to the leaders of two of the prominent ones. Frank Kameny, he was founder of the Washington, D.C. chapter of the Mattachine Society, one of the earliest gay rights groups. And you also spoke with Shirley Willer, president of a group called Daughters of Bilitis. Let's listen to what each of them told you about what it was like being gay before Stonewall, and we'll start with Frank Kameny.
We were sick. We were sinners. We were perverts. You have your long litany of pejoratives. There was absolutely nothing whatsoever which anybody heard at any time, anywhere, at all, which was other than negative. Nothing.
I remember being picked up by the front of my shirt and slapped back and forth by a policeman.
Did the policeman say anything that when he was hitting you to indicate?
He called me names. Pervert, you queer, you SOB, and so forth.
And you couldn't call the police, could you?
No, I couldn't call the police. It was a policeman.
Was this the first bar you went to?
Yes.
So you got slapped around the first time you were on your way to a bar?
The first time I was on my way to a bar.
Eric Marcus, what motivated people pre-Stonewall to speak out and demand their rights?
Well, both Frank and Shirley had reasons to be angry. Shirley was furious. She was just on her way to a bar, her first bar in the early 1940s, when she got picked up by a policeman and slapped around because of how she looked. Frank was furious because he'd been fired from his job in the Army Map Service during the Lavender Scare. President Eisenhower had signed an executive order in 1953 barring all gay people from employment in the federal government. So Frank couldn't find another job. He was a PhD astronomer. And he said, the government declared war on me. I don't allow the government to declare war on me. I'm going to declare war on the government. And he took his case all the way to the Supreme Court in 1961 and lost. And that's when he founded the D.C. chapter of the Mattachine Society.
In addition to the anger, there was real fear. And two of the people you spoke with told you about the fear and the risk that people took if they were out publicly. Let's hear from a man named Craig Rodwell, who was founder of the first gay bookstore in the U.S. and possibly in the world, the Oscar Wilde Memorial Bookstore, and also a woman named Sylvia Rivera. She was a transgender woman who became really a leader in the movement. First, here's part of your conversation with Craig Rodwell.
What was everyone afraid of?
Being beaten or arrested, and I suppose ultimately of being publicly identified as a homosexual.
What would that mean?
Well, perhaps loss of job, or in other cities, when they would raid gay bars, the papers would publish the name and address and where they worked when the people who were arrested on the front page of the papers the next day.
You want me to tell you how many times I went to jail?
How many times did you go?
Oh, if you walk down 42nd Street, it even looked like a faggot, you were going to jail. This is what we learned to live with at that time. We had to live with it until that day.
And Eric Marcus, Sylvia told you she had been to jail about how many times?
I think about 200 times.
200 times.
Yeah, Sylvia was had lived on the streets since she was 11 years old. Sylvia might self-identify now as a gender nonconforming teen, later as a trans woman. And in those days, there were very few options for kids who were thrown out of their homes, and today still. And Sylvia wound up on the streets of New York hustling. And both were important figures in very different ways in the movement. Craig was one of the principal organizers of the what's come to be known as the Pride March, but what was then called the Christopher Street Liberation Day March, which happened 1 year after the Stonewall Uprising.
Tell us about the bar itself. It was actually a pretty seedy place, right?
It was. I've heard it described variously as a dive bar, as a dump. It was owned by the mob. It was in a space where there'd been a fire, and it had simply been painted over black on the interior. Here's Morty Manford.
It was pretty shabby, and the glasses weren't particularly clean when they served you a drink, and they were watered-down drinks.
Morty was a college student at Columbia University at the time of the Stonewall Uprising and was at Stonewall the night of the uprising.
They had a few some lights in the back on the dance floor area, and there was a jukebox.
It was a place where gay people could go to dance. It was principally for younger people. And as one of the people I interviewed said, it was like Noah's Ark. There was two of every kind. So it was actually a private club. There were all kinds of adjustments made because of the laws in those days. And to get in, you had to sign a register book. And one of the stories I love is that in the register book, you found names like, you think Judy Garland had been there every night, or Donald Duck. People didn't use their real names because there was a real danger of, if you were found out, you could lose your job, you could be fired from your job, lose your apartment even.
Let's talk about the night the riots started, June 27th, 1969. Now, it was pretty common for cops to rough up a gay bar and ask for payoffs, which is what happened on that night, as usual. It was as people were released that the night took an unusual turn.
Yeah, there were a number of unusual things that night because the police went in at 1:20 a.m. on the 28th of June. And normally the police would raid a bar earlier in the evening before people had had a lot to drink. So people usually dispersed, but that night people stayed outside, and they ultimately confronted the police.
Let's listen to a few of the people who told you about what that night was like from the perspective of those who were there. This is Morty Manford, Martin Boyce, and Sylvia Rivera.
The prisoners were herded into a paddy wagon parked right on the sidewalk in front of the bar. They were left unguarded, and they simply walked out and left the paddy wagon, to the cheer of the throng.
But there was trouble between one of the drag queens in the paddy wagon and the cop outside, and she kicked him. I only saw her heel kick him back, but that was enough for him to jump in the back of the car. And you heard it. You heard the sounds of flesh and bone against metal. And, you know, it was a sound we all knew.
Everybody's looking at each other, but why do we have to keep on constantly putting up with this?
Yeah, one of the interesting things about Stonewall, actually any incident that people witness, in talking to many different people, there are different perspectives on what happened. But what everyone agrees on is that that night, instead of running from the police, ultimately the police ran from gay people.
One person apparently threw a rock, which broke one of the windows on the second floor. And the shattering of glass, the crowd sort of, ooh.
One detail that I hadn't heard before was that the rioters were throwing coins at the police. Explain what that was about.
I love that detail, and I had heard that from a number of people, and I didn't understand. And Sylvia Rivera was the one who explained it to me.
The nickels, the dimes, the pennies, and the quarters started flying.
Why do people do that?
The payoff. That was the payoff.
Oh, 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 oh.
That was the payoff.
It was to symbolize the payoff.
Yep. You already got...
Here's some more.
And here's some more. To be there, you know, it's just like, oh, it was so beautiful. I just like...
Was it exciting?
Oh, it was so exciting. It was like, ow, we're doing it.
I love that turnabout that suddenly people who the police had grown accustomed to chasing were being chased by the people they tormented. Gay people had had enough and they weren't going to put up with it anymore.
Now talk us through how those nights of riots evolved into a movement.
If the infrastructure, the movement infrastructure, hadn't existed at the time of Stonewall, there were already 50 to 60 organizations across the country fighting for gay rights in 1969. So the organizers who formed new groups right after Stonewall planned the first Pride March, the Christopher Street Liberation Day March, 1 year from the Stonewall Uprising, and called around to other organizations around the country and said, do the same thing, mark the day with a march, with a protest. So the number of organizations that formed in that first year after Stonewall grew from those 50 to 60 original organizations to 1,500, and then 2 years later, a total of 2,500.
Morty Manford, who went on to found PFLAG, Parents, Friends, and Family of Lesbians and Gays, had an interesting description of what made Stonewall such a touch point.
It was a dramatic gesture of defiance. Mm-hmm. For me, there was a slight lancing of the festering wound, mm-hmm. of anger at this kind of unfair harassment and prejudice.
It was a very inspiring thing, and that spirit spread to young people all over the country. We grew up in a world, people my age, where we assumed that we should be treated equally. But it was what was inspired at Stonewall that led to that dramatic explosion in activism across the country and then around the world.
This explosion in organizing and mobilizing in the year after Stonewall kind of was embodied by a march that happened on the 1 year anniversary. And there was a documentary produced around that time in 1970, and it was called Gay and Proud by Breck Artery. And it may sound a little dated, but it does capture something about that moment.
A new spirit of regained humanity is awakening in homosexuals all over the world. And it won't stop until all of us, all of the millions of gay people, can stand in the sun and be free, as we were for a few hours today.
When I picked that up, I just got these chills that somebody had thought to record this in 1970. And that this was a perspective already, that it was understood that Stonewall was a turning point.
You've spent so much time interviewing people who were the founders and leaders of this movement, and many of them are no longer with us. So for you, looking back on 50 years, what do you see as the legacy of Stonewall?
It has come to represent the idea of freedom, of equal rights, fighting against oppression. So if anyone takes anything away from Stonewall, and most people know virtually nothing about it, I hope they take away the message that it's possible to change the world, to fight back against what we think is wrong. But I don't want people to think that it's automatic, that change just happens. You have to organize. You have to channel that energy. You have to work within the system and outside the system. And I am very personally, I feel grateful for the young people who sacrificed so much, because what they did there at Stonewall and the activists who worked in the 20 years before Stonewall made possible the life that I live today. So I am grateful to them, wherever they are now, for having done what they did to make this world possible.
Eric Marcus, with interviews that he recorded years ago for his book, Making Gay History, which is also now a podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ari. It's a pleasure.